I'm producer Rob Sivak, sitting in for Tom Hall, and this is Midday. Today, we begin with our monthly edition of Midday at the Movies, and our movie mavens Anne Hornaday and Jed Dietz will be helping us size up some of the new releases hitting local theaters this weekend, including the long-awaited sequel to the 1982 sci-fi classic Blade Runner. And we'll be talking about the trove of independent films making their way through the U.S. and international festival circuit, including Toronto and the recent Milwaukee film festivals that Anne's just back from and will tell us more about. Then theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins us with her weekly review. Today she'll be spotlighting a fascinating and controversial Depression-era play called The Cradle Will Rock, a play the federal government tried to shut down. That's being revived by Iron Crow Theater. That's all coming up as Midday gets underway right after these headlines. Hello, I'm Rob Sivak, sitting in for Tom Hall today, and welcome to another edition of Midday at the Movies, our monthly look at new and notable films and trends in the movie industry. This is a foray that we make in the good company of our esteemed movie maven regulars, Anne Hornaday. She's the film critic for The Washington Post. Hello, Anne.
Hello, Rob.
Nice to see you again. And Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and that's the home of the newly renovated Parkway Theater. Good morning, Jed.
Morning.
Good afternoon, I should say.
Good noon.
Let's get started. There's a lot of films opening this weekend, and I thought we would just spotlight a few of them to start off with. And, Jed, what comes to mind as some of the best of the new openings?
Yeah, this season you tend to get a lot of really interesting films as people sort of start positioning for award season and stuff.
Oscar consideration.
Exactly, yeah. All of those awards, yeah. We've got a couple opening this week. I'll mention three quick titles that are opening at the Parkway that everybody wants to have their eye on. There's one, a documentary about Qatari falconers. To great wealth and sort of in the desert and called The Challenge. And then there's a film that Sundance for the first time is helping to distribute. They this year for the first time have gone in to help two films that were at this year's festival. This is a documentary about chronic fatigue syndrome made by a woman named Jennifer Bree, who is also in the film. And both of these, The Challenge and Unrest, are opening this weekend and really fascinating.
Unrest is the name of this film about chronic fatigue syndrome.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Yep. And lots more information on the website if you're interested in these. And then next week we're opening a fictional film about a ballet dancer that is was made in France, and it's an extraordinary film called Paulina, made by a sort of a team, a choreographer and a director. This young woman, Veronica Zvnicketska, I think is how you pronounce her name, is just extraordinary, who plays the lead. And the choreography is beautiful, and the dance, which is also is very traditional ballet, and then as she hits Paris, starts freeing up into much more modern dance that she gets very intrigued by, having seen none of it in her young life, is just beautifully shot. Very hard to do in film and television to shoot dance well. This film does it. And so that one's called Paulina, which is the character's name adapted from a book, and then Unrest and The Challenge this weekend.
Yeah. What are some of the new openings that you're looking at, Anne, this weekend?
Well, the big one, of course, is Blade Runner 2049, which is the follow-up to the iconic science fiction film of the 1980s. And so everybody's got their eye on this one.
That also has Ridley Scott's imprimatur, but he's the producer on it.
Exactly.
Right?
And then this filmmaker named Denis Villeneuve, this Canadian filmmaker who's really gifted. He did Arrival.
Arrival, yeah.
Yes, which was, he's a very, very solid filmmaker. The big draw for this one is that, and also that Harrison Ford is coming back. Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford, of course, is like creating this great aftermarket career of reappearing
in
all
Star
these
Wars
iconic
too.
Movies that he's been in with the younger actors.
And
doing
not a hologram.
Quite well.
It's really him.
No, and also, like, frankly, acquitting himself beautifully well in all of these. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still so good. So it's Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling is the new, the young guy. And now I must admit, full disclosure, I didn't get to see this in advance because I was attending the Milwaukee Film Festival when the press screening happened. But, you know, the word on the street is that it's very moody and beautifully shot. Roger Deakins is the cinematographer of record on this one, and he always does just exquisite work. So I'm going to see it bright and early tomorrow morning, and I can't wait.
Well, let's have a little listen to some of that moody atmospherics that Villeneuve has given us.
The nickel is for the colonial ships, closest any of them or any of us is going to get to that grand life off-world. Come on now. What sword do you have in mind? Because I got all kinds.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm not buying.
No, no, no. This is just my game, and I play it fair. No, no. I mean, bigger than you. Bigger than you would try to shut me down. Bigger than you, and they were men.
Ryan Gosling giving somebody a hard time in Blade Runner 2049. That's the sequel, the long-awaited sequel to the 1982 sci-fi classic. We don't know much about the storyline, but I assume that there's been a lot of secrecy around it, right?
The press screening that did happen in D.C. was preceded by this long list of do's and don'ts and be carefuls from Warner Brothers saying, you know, don't disclose this and don't talk about that. And if you must talk about this, here's some helpful verbiage for you. You know, I mean, they really, I think, overstepped their bounds in terms of but I understand, too. I mean, we're living in the age of spoiler alerts, and I agree. You know, I don't like to spoil things for people either. So I would hope that my colleagues would have known that without being told.
Right.
We'll see.
Another film opening is Battle of the Sexes, and I think Steve Carell fans will appreciate this is a big role for him. I think that he really shines along with Emma Stone. What do you make of this film? What are your feelings about it?
So it's a historic recreation of this moment in the Battle of the Sexes culturally, which was a challenge from Bobby Riggs, a very high level in his heyday, very high level pro in the men's circuit. And his idea was he could beat any of the women. Women at the time of this were significantly paid less than men. I mean, like 10% of what the men got at the major tournaments, at the U.S. Open and Wimbledon. Billie Jean King was in her 20s and was an athlete, had been playing baseball and was becoming a really great tennis player and didn't like this. And
she was outspoken about the inequities.
Yep. Yeah. And Bobby Riggs, who was by this time in his life a hustler. He was, as you find out in the film, an addicted gambler. And he loved the sport of gambling, and he challenged, decided he would challenge women to compete. And his claim was, of course, I would beat them all. It doesn't matter. I'm much older, and, you know, they're the top of the game, but I'm a man, so I'm going to win. So that's the setup. And what you see through this film, directed by the two people who did Little Miss Sunshine to great acclaim a few years back, is this incredible moment that even if you've lived through it, I think you will find unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick listen to a clip from Battle of the Sexes.
Don't get me wrong. I love women in the bedroom and in the kitchen. But these days, they want to be everywhere. They want to be doing everything. Where is it going to end? Pretty soon, us fellas aren't going to be able to go to a ball game. We're not going to be able to go fishing. We're not going to be able to stop and have a drink after work. And that's what this whole women's lit thing is about. And it's got to stop. And Bobby Riggs is the man to stop it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Custer's last stand.
Keep talking, Bobby. The more nonsense you spout, the worse it's going to be when you lose.
Well, I'm the ladies number one. I'm the champ. Why would I lose?
Because dinosaurs can't play tennis.
Dinosaurs can't play tennis. The masters of misogyny in that role, Steve Carell and Emma Stone from Battle of the Sexes. What else have we got opening up this week that captures your attention?
Well, there's an intriguing movie called Mark Felt, The Man Who Brought Down the White House, that is making its way into theaters. I'm not sure if it's coming to Baltimore this weekend, but you should keep a lookout for him.
I think next week at the Charles.
Yeah.
Mark Felt was the guy who...
Deep Throat.
Otherwise
known
as Deep Throat.
In the Woodward and Bernstein accounts.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so this is the story. This is his story. This is the story of what was happening for him during a period that most of us think of in terms of All the President's Men, you know,
the Watergate
another iconic,
investigations.
Yes, exactly, yeah. the 1976 movie. And it's been, I think it's been competently done by the director, Peter Landisman. I'm not doing handsprings about the movie itself. It's rather workmanlike and direct. But Liam Neeson delivers a really, I think, fascinating performance as this guy who had been the number two at the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover, utterly expected himself to be put in that place when Hoover died, which, by the way, was only 6 weeks before Watergate happened.
Yeah.
And so his own ambitions kind of run athwart of the Watergate investigations. And so for many years, a lot of people did speculate that it was Felt. You know, he was often mentioned in terms of the parlor game of who was Deep Throat, just because he was so angry about being passed over for the top job. But this movie very much portrays him in a heroic light, that he did this out of idealism and trying to save the democracy and trying to save this institution that he had devoted 30 years of his life to. Like I said, it's a good, straightforward dramatization of this period. Some good supporting performances from Diane Lane, who plays his wife. Mm-hmm. Josh Lucas has a really juicy supporting role as one of his associates, who you can see is starting to twig to the fact that his boss might be the guy, mm-hmm. and he doesn't quite know how to deal with that. So it's an intriguing movie.
And Liam Neeson gets to step away from the Taken
genre. Absolutely, which we're so happy to see him do.
Yes.
I know. It's like, the Taken movies are a lot of fun, and it's nifty to see an older person get out there and you know, kick tush. But it's also nice when a fine actor like him can get a really dramatic role.
And recreate a role that Hal Holbrook did.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and the movie does quote them. I mean, the movie, Landisman, to his credit, embraces All the President. He doesn't shy away from comparisons. He stages that iconic scene in the parking garage with the added twist, and I think a really good one, of casting a truly young actor as Woodward. I mean, Woodward was only 29 at that time. He wasn't Robert Redford. You know, Robert Redford was 40 when he made All the President's Men. And so this is a much more accurate movie chronologically in terms of Woodward's own inexperience. And then there are some also key scenes with Sandy Smith, who was the Time magazine reporter mm-hmm. that Felt was also leaking to, who's completely erased from All the President's Men. And he's played mm-hmm. by Bruce Greenwood. So there's some, you know, it's a very intriguing alternate view of that.
And a very timely movie, it seems to me. The power of one individual stepping forward to do what they believe to be the right thing. And
that is absolutely true, especially in the year of the president firing James Comey, and mm-hmm. you know, an administration that's engulfed by investigations in its own right.
And a reminder, I think, like Spotlight was, of how important, really, you know, on the ground journalism is, that hard work, and how important it is to all of us as a part of our democracy.
Right, right. I mean, with all the cries of fake news, I think journalism has taken such a beating, and it's important to remember what hardworking reporters can actually bring to the fore.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I would argue Battle of the Sexes is very timely. I mean, I don't think it was set out to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, there's this cultural moment where things were shifting. Women were asserting more power, changing their roles of just being in the home. And it bothered people. I mean, and you see it very clearly. It's a highly entertaining movie. I don't want to label it.
It is. It's really fun to watch. Yeah. It's just so much fun to watch.
And Emma Stone, who looks nothing like Billie Jean. And as far as I don't even know that she knows how to play tennis. She's so good in this role. It's really great.
And there's a great, speaking of supporting cast, Valerie and John have cast a lot of comedians in these supporting roles, which I think kind of leans into the camp nature of the event itself and winks at that and plays with that. And it also goes a long way in making the movie just a lot of fun to watch. It's
terrific,
funny.
Yep.
It's bright. It's sprightly. It moves. It's just great fun. It's PG-13. It's a really good family movie. It's one of those great general kind of all-rounders.
It's a piece of history. Jaw-dropping, though.
Oh, I mean, totally.
Really unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, and sexism is still alive and well, of
As
course.
Yeah.
But you see some of its...
In very different guises, though, you'll
That's
see.
That's right. That's right. Ann Hornaday is the film critic for The Washington Post, and Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and we're doing Midday at the Movies today. We've got to take a short break now, and when we come back, we invite you to join the conversation. Planning to check out the new Blade Runner sequel this weekend? Seen a great indie film you want to share? Let us know. Give us a call at 410-662-8780. Or you can email us at midday@wypr.org or send us a tweet at @MiddayTomHall. We'll be right back.
This is your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. I'm Midday Senior Producer Rob Sivak, sitting in for Tom Hall, and you're listening to Midday at the Movies. That's our monthly look at what's new on the silver screen and on that big screen in your media room and your laptop or your mobile pad or smartphone or your watch or wherever you're watching movies these days. And we're joined, as always, by our movie gurus Ann Hornaday, the film critic for The Washington Post, and Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. And by the way, listeners, you are welcome to be part of our conversation. Tell us about the movies on your mind. You can call us at 410-662-8780, email us at midday@wypr.org, or send us a tweet at @MiddayTomHall. So, Anne, I wanted to ask you about your recent trips to the Toronto Film Festival.
Yes.
And the Milwaukee Film Festival.
Yes.
Which is a kind of a breed apart from some of the larger festivals.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Milwaukee Festival first. I think that's interesting to sort of get into that. What's going on up in Milwaukee?
There's a lot going on in Milwaukee.
You don't think
Milwaukee.
Of it as a film capital.
No, but, you don't, but it is. And it's I have long wanted to visit because, you know, they have had this kind of burgeoning film scene even since the 1990s when Chris Smith was coming out of there with his work. And I was lucky enough to be invited to be the keynote speaker at this year's festival. They've been going on for 9 years. It goes on for 2 weeks every year, right before sort of peak foliage season up in that part of the world. It's just a beautiful area. They're right on Lake Michigan, a really nifty city with lots of layers of architecture, and this old industrial, you know, with the beer, the factories and the breweries are still there. And they are blessed with just these amazing old 20s theaters that they have, you know, thankfully have been preserved. And like the Parkway, the festival is going to be taking over the big palace theater called the Oriental. Next summer, they're going to start operating that theater and programming it, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
And it reminds me a lot of the Maryland Festival. It's just, it's very community oriented. They're not interested necessarily in great big, you know, in big red carpet premieres or acting like some kind of market. They're really there to serve their core constituency, which is Milwaukee filmgoers, and then the people that are starting to come in from out of town just because it's such a great time. I mean, they know how to put on a party. Mm. There's obviously lots of beer and cold all week long, all weekend long. But like
de rigueur.
Like every year they do, which I had to miss this year, but I want to go back for this. Every year they show the Jonathan Demme documentary, Stop Making Sense, at the Oriental, and it's a dance party. Nobody sits down to watch it. They're all up dancing while they're watching the movie, which is apparently just like legendary now. I mean, it's just the event of the year. So it's just an example of these kind of local regional festivals that really understand their mission, know exactly how to execute it, and just do it beautifully. And then that's what creates a destination festival, because once word gets out, then people start going because it's hip and it's cool and people have a lot of fun. And I feel like that's where Milwaukee is at right now.
Were there any particular films that you thought were significant that showcased them?
Well, you know, they're showing stuff that's on the circuit. So they're showing a lot of stuff that showed at Maryland this year. But their opening night film was a really wonderful documentary called Stumped, and it's about a young man who was a film professor in Montana, and he was starting his first days of classes and had a pain in his leg and basically went to the hospital to get it looked at, and it was a rampant staph infection that took four of his limbs, both arms, both legs. Yeah. When he got out of that hospital, he had been amputated all those four limbs. And so it's about...
Hence the title. Yes.
Exactly. And luckily, he is a person of just uncommon spirit and character and humor. He's a stand-up... I don't want to use the term stand-up comedian, but I think, you know, he is a comedian. And grapples with all of this with a lot of humor and a lot of grit. So it's about his healing. It's about prostheses and medical advances. Mm. And mostly it's about him and his relationships with his partner and his caregivers and his family. And it's just a wonderful... There's a movie out now called Stronger with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah,
playing
say,
a character in a very similar situation, mm-hmm. which is a terrific movie. But this is like, you know, it's always better when you can see the real life version. And it really is very inspiring. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. And yeah, but just a lot of the same sort of features and documentaries mm-hmm. that make up indie festival fare that probably most likely the viewers wouldn't get a chance to see otherwise.
Yeah, one of the films you saw at Toronto is called Lady Bird.
Yes, indeed.
Looks like a very funny, interesting, yes. touching movie. And I wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about that, and we'll have a clip of it later.
Yes, it is. This is the writing-directing debut of Greta Gerwig, the actress Greta Gerwig. And she just comes out swinging. I mean, it's just a really assured, delightful debut. It's a coming-of-age story, I would imagine largely based on her own coming-of-age as a high school student, where she's, you know, got the usual adolescent angst, a lot of anxiety around who she is and what her passions are. She joins the school play, so those are the sort of first intimations that maybe this acting thing might be for her. But largely, she's just kind of searching. She's searching for identity and for love and to get away from Sacramento, where she's been growing up. And that her character is played by Saoirse Ronan. Mm. And yet another, I mean, she's just one of our finest screen actresses, I think.
And her mom also, is that
Laurie Metcalf? Yeah, who I'm sure, and then Tracy Letts plays the dad. And, and it's a really terrific cast. Timothy Chalamet, who's been in a lot of these movies, in Call Me By Your Name, which is another big festival favorite. But it's just a really delightful, again, very self-assured, self-possessed movie.
We'll take a quick listen to this clip from Lady Bird.
I hate California. I want to go to the East Coast.
I want to go where culture is, like
How
New
in the
York,
world did I raise such
or at least
snob.
Connecticut or New Hampshire, where writers live in the
get
woods.
Get into those schools anyway.
Mom!
You should just go to City College. You know, with your work ethic, just go to City College and then to jail and then back to City College, and then maybe you'd learn to pull yourself up and not expect everybody to do everything.
In that scene, it appears that she has thrown herself out of the car. Not quite sure what happens
right.
at the end.
Yes.
So it's so amazing. So Greta Gerwig has been here a number of times at the festival as she was just starting out as an actress, but even then was writing, co-writing with Joe Swanberg on some of the early movies. And was in Francis Ha, people will remember, and helped sort of create that movie too. And so wonderful. I haven't seen Lady Bird yet, but I can't wait. I mean, this cast is incredible, and to see Greta working at this level is very exciting.
Yeah. It's like she arrived fully formed. There were some really exciting debuts at Toronto this year. Aaron Sorkin has his directorial debut.
Right.
Very assured debut directing job, a movie called Molly's Game about a young woman, based on a true story, the young woman who ran this incredibly high-powered poker game, high stakes, high money, high role in poker game out in L.A., which featured a lot of Hollywood actors who are played in the movie disguise, you know, not under their real names, but people who are familiar with the story will know who they are. Jessica Chastain plays Molly, and it's a really slick, sleek, nice job.
And Aaron Sorkin is in good form?
Very good form, yeah. I mean, of course he wrote it. We know he can write.
Yeah.
But directing's a different animal, and I think he really acquitted himself quite well.
Yeah. It's good to see he's kept his life together, too.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Exactly. That's always nice to see. But no, there was, and one of the other high points for me was a movie called First Reformed, which is by Paul Schrader.
Oh,
and,
Paul
you know,
Schrader.
A lot of us know from Paul Taxi Schrader Driver. From Taxi Driver, exactly. And he's had kind of an uneven career in recent years. You know, I mean, he's still out there hitting.
Uneven's a nice way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, but I give him credit for you know, keeping at it. But this is a complete return to form for him. It is magnificent. It's a story about a priest having a crisis of faith in this little tiny upstate New York church, and Ethan Hawke is the lead. And I'm, you know, I
love Ethan Hawke.
He's just been doing such extraordinarily good work recently, and this is yet another example. And it's just Schrader at the top of his game, and there's something so exhilarating and gratifying when someone of that stature come back with just something that just blows your mind. It's so good. So it was exciting. It was a good, that was a good festival this year. Lots of good stuff coming down the pike.
Jed, you've got something called the Latin American Visionary Cinema Festival going on at the Parkway right now. Tell me a little bit about that. What are you showing there?
So this is a series of films of emerging filmmakers from all over Latin and South America. We started it really, it gestated initially with an idea from PNC Bank, who was very interested in this part of the film world. Not hugely knowledgeable. I mean, they came to us because we'd done some things together. And Eric Hatch and Scott Braid, our programming team, put together a collection of films, some of which have played our festival and some of which have not. And we started with a fantastic film called Club Sandwich, totally charming film, filmed in Oaxaca, Mexico, sadly now, having been hit by one of the big earthquakes recently. But we're it's a series of 10 or 12 films that are playing all through the next, I think we've got one more week or maybe 10 days of them, and they don't play for extended runs, but so just check our website and see. And if something looks even mildly intriguing to you, I recommend trying it out.
Kings of Nowhere, is that one of the films in that festival, or is that?
I can't remember the Kings of Nowhere. Gigante is in now. Club Sandwich, as I mentioned, was in.
Another film that's it's been out for a little while, but I don't know if we've talked about it, is Menashe.
So this is a fascinating film that's at the Charles now. And, and again, a sort of cross-cultural film. It was filmed in America, in Brooklyn, in the Hasidic community. And these are not professional actors. It is scripted, and it's fiction, but based on some true life stories.
About an Orthodox Jewish family?
Well, it's specifically about the issue, which I, of course, knew nothing about. In Orthodox Judaism, you must, to have a child, you must have a mate. You must have a nuclear family. And after a split in this family, Menashe was very eager to have his son, who he's very close to, with him. And this is, there's a maze that he has to sort of get through. Many people just urging him, simple, just get married, you know, find somebody and get married. And he believes you should marry somebody you're in love with and not just married people. And it's this fascinating, quite funny, quite poignant story that is very worth seeing, I think.
We mentioned Stronger with Jake Gyllenhaal. That's also in that's in local theaters now.
Yes,
that's at the Charles also right now.
Lucky. This is a very interesting film that's just opening with Harry Dean Stanton. I think he just recently passed away. This was his last work.
In Quad Cinema in New York, just coincidentally, had been doing a retrospective of his work. I mean, this incredible life work, and then he died. Sort of, they had that all scheduled. This was a film that was, I think, premiered at South by Southwest this year. It's directed by an actor, John Carroll Lynch. You Googled him and saw images, you'd immediately recognize things he's been in. And it's a lovely story, a lovely piece of work from him, and this unintended but really great tribute to Harry Dean Stanton. And there's talk that he would get some pretty high award nomination stuff coming into the fall. It's that kind of a performance. And obviously that would be unusual because of it being posthumous.
Right. Another strong performance and a great actor, Gary Oldman, plays Winston Churchill in The Darkest Hour.
Indeed.
is you've seen that.
Yes,
film.
That was also at Toronto.
Yeah, give me a sense of how that film
went. Oh, my. Well, you know, this is the year of Dunkirk. We're living in the year of Dunkirk because we had this wonderful film last spring called Their Finest, which was in theaters briefly. I think should be available on streaming or DVD, but do look it up if you can because I thought it was utterly charming.
Yep.
And then we had, of course, Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk, which is this big screen,
big spectacle.
Epic adventure. Mm-hmm. Spectacle, exactly. I thought absolutely exquisitely done and beautiful and really fun to watch. This is the same period told from Churchill's point of view. And Oldman completely disappears. And, you know, it's this great kind of piece of, you know, he's working with prosthetics and makeup and costumes. And
he becomes Churchill.
And the cigar and the bed and the gin and the champagne, I should say. And he has a lot of fun. It's a very playful, very, very endearing performance. But I think beyond kind of the stunt of it, he really does kind of, he creates a character. He creates this person that you care so much about this guy and what he's up against. Kristen Scott Thomas plays Clemmie, his wife, and she's just exquisite and wonderful. Mm. And it's been directed by Joe Wright, who did Atonement and Pride and Prejudice. And he's somebody and did a great Dunkirk scene, by the way, in Atonement. He did this wonderful one take tracking shot of the evacuation that was magnificent in its own right, but he really does have a very strong sense of visual staging and space and knowing how to put people in space in a way that's very expressive.
And so capturing the period.
And capturing the period. And so it's just a lovely movie all around, beautifully written. I mean, it'll be coming out later this fall into, I think, maybe even December. But and it's opening night film at the Middleburg Film Festival, which gets underway in a couple of weeks. So it'll be kind of, you know, making its way to theaters. But there's no doubt that it'll be an Oscar contender on all those levels.
The Middleburg Film Festival. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
That was news to me that we had a significant film festival right in our backyard.
Yes, indeed.
In Northern Virginia.
Yes. In addition to the Maryland Festival, we're blessed to have this festival that was founded 5 years. It's only in its fifth year this year. This will be its fifth edition. So it's relatively new to the scene, but really kind of has positioned itself to take advantage of this award season. You know, Toronto and Telluride and Venice, those three festivals kind of together launch award season. So from September on through Christmas, we're getting all of these movies that hope to get attention at Oscar time. Which is good because it gives them kind of free advertising and allows the studios to keep making them. But this is when we think of all these quality movies like The Darkest Hour, like Lady Bird. There's a movie called Mudbound that actually premiered at Sundance.
That's a Carrie Mulligan.
Carrie Mulligan, yeah. Jason Clarke, and Mary J. Blige in a performance that absolutely astonished me.
Yeah.
Astonishing. So good. That's beautiful. But Middleburg has really kind of, it's almost, I've never been to Telluride, but the way people describe Telluride reminds me of Middleburg in that it's very intimate. It's a little bit isolated, which is good because you make your own little community in this beautiful physical setting in the horse country of Virginia. They're showing really top flight movies, often with the talent coming in. Emma Stone came in last year with La La Land. This year, Valerie Faris is going to be there for a special screening of Battle of the Sexes. Greta Gerwig will be there. And Dee Reese from Mudbound will be there. They're going to be honoring. James Ivory will come with Call Me By Your Name. They're getting Last Flag Flying, the new Richard Linklater film that everybody's really curious about. Griffin Dunn will be there with a Joan Didion documentary. So it's just a lot of fun. You know, it's a really good weekend of excellent movies. Mm-hmm. And they get a lot of those buzzy movies from Toronto, which is it's nice to be able to hear about them and then be able to see them right away.
Yeah. So it's interesting of all those, Mudbound will not play movie theaters. It's a Netflix.
Really?
Yep. It was bought by Netflix out of Sundance. And I think it drops November 17.
We're kind of waiting to see what they will do. I mean, there was some question. They usually play L.A., New York, and then they stream the same day. But I think a lot of us are questioning that with this movie, saying this deserves, it really should be seen in theaters.
Yeah, is that a unique kind of model of where there's no theaters screenings?
So Netflix and Amazon, which are these two big new producers of movies, right. 5 years ago, neither one was making any movies. And Netflix, you know, there's a little secret about this, but everybody is saying has the biggest production budget of any studio on the planet. And they've taken slightly different paths. Amazon did Manchester by the Sea last year, so obviously did a major theatrical push before they brought it onto the site. And Netflix has gone both ways. I would say Netflix has been less interested generally in theatrical as a tool, we have a theater here, but I would speak for all theaters. I think they're making a mistake because I think the theater world, the movie theater world, is always a great place to see a movie, and it's a great place to get word of mouth going for then people to see it on your site. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we're new. You know, they're all figuring these things out, and Netflix, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Mudbound, because it certainly came out of Sundance with some momentum. There's lovely cinematography in it.
Oh, it's just beautiful.
Rachel Morrison, who had a film that we ended our festival with a couple years ago called Little Accidents, and she's been doing wonderful work as the cinematographer. So I think Anne's right. I mean, if I were them, I would push very hard for pure selfish marketing reasons to get this into movie theaters. Yeah. But we'll see.
And as someone who just spent the last couple of years turning an old ruin, in a sense, into a movie palace at the Parkway, I can imagine that you'd encourage people to continue coming to the theaters for their movie experience. It is unusual that a film would not have that opportunity to be screened in that big space.
Yeah, in some films it works. I mean, I think it depends. I think it's, and Joe Swanberg actually is a pioneer in this in terms
Absolutely.
Of, not every film needs to have a theatrical release. You know, some films have been going direct to Netflix and have been having very nice little lives and have connected with audiences that way. So I think you have to be very careful and really understand the audience. It really comes down to understanding the audience.
Yeah, totally. I do think they're seen often as mutually exclusive,
right.
and that I think isn't true. And I'll just one quick example. We did this Barry Levinson's great film about Bernie Madoff. It's an HBO finance thing that we had at the festival, thanks to Barry. I mean, they were not planning any sort of theatrical run. And I had seen it on my laptop, and I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. Seeing it on the big screen was a sort of revelatory, and it's not maybe a movie you would necessarily think, oh, it's great, landscapes and stuff like that, but it makes a difference.
Yeah. Well, our time has flown. Jed, thanks very much for joining us. And Anne, as usual, Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Anne Hornaday, of course, is the Washington Post film critic. Always a pleasure to see you, and
thank you, Rob.
We'll catch
thanks,
you next
Rob.
Month.
That thanks was great.
Million.
Thanks.
Coming up after a short break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins us with a review of a controversial Depression-era play in a revival now at Iron Crow Theater. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.